It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delphiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Take cover. Good afternoon. Welcome aboard the Biden administration floating a plan to bring back face masks. This as the coronavirus spreads at a rate not seen since the beginning of this pandemic. During a town hall in Cincinnati last night, the president hinted that masks in school will be par for the course come the fall.
The CDC is going to say everyone under the age of 12 should probably be wearing a mask in school. Those over the age of 12, if you're vaccinated, you shouldn't wear a mask. If you aren't vaccinated, you should be wearing a mask.
Right now, children under 12 are not eligible to receive the COVID vaccine, but the president predicts that will change soon.
My expectation is that sometime, maybe in the beginning of the school year, at the end of August, beginning of September, October, they'll get a final approval saying the FDA said no. This is it. It's good.
The White House in talks with the CDC to require face coverings whenever the vaccinated and unvaccinated are congregated in crowded places. Fox News medical correspondent Dr. Mark Siegel.
A vaccine is a cannon. The mask is a pea shooter. And think about that for a minute. A cannon, well, too many people are afraid of the recoil of that cannon, right? They're worried it's hurting their shoulder, but they're shooting at a viral wolf. So I think the emphasis needs to be on the cannon, not on the pea shooter. Masks have been shown to work. They definitely work indoors. They've cut down on community transmission. I think they have a role, but I also agree with the point that if you say masks or vaccines, you're undervaluing what the vaccine is, which is huge.
New COVID infections in this country have tripled since the start of the month. Experts blame that fast-moving Delta variant. China today rejected calls from the World Health Organization for another investigation into the origins of COVID. Was it naturally occurring or man-made in a lab in Wuhan? The head of the WHO accusing the communist regime of being an unwilling partner in this probe. He says investigators tasked with tracing this pandemic to its beginning are being hampered every step of the way by Chinese officials. Countdown to Tokyo. Opening ceremonies of the Summer Olympics will happen tomorrow. The games are go despite a concern about COVID-19. Mike Tirico of NBC Sports will anchor the network's prime time coverage.
I think a lot would have to happen for it to fall apart. Overall, right now, it hasn't spread, and that's a good sign. I think everyone's being very careful and cautious. Now, the thing I'll be interested to watch is in the opening ceremony, will we see distancing when the athletes walk in? Will we see some athletes not walk because they don't want to go through the concerns of being around a lot of athletes? We'll still see a lot of folks, but I don't know if we'll see as many as we normally do.
The network plans to broadcast the opening ceremonies live as they happen around 7 a.m. tomorrow. Then they will re-air the event at 7:30 in the evening. Protests broke out again last night in Miami's Little Havana community. They want to see communism come to an end 90 miles south of there on the island of Cuba. Some of the demonstrators were soaked in fake blood.
This blood represents the blood that is going to be on the hands of those who stand next to the dictatorship and not next to the Cuban people. Joe Biden, Cuban wants freedom. They need freedom. They don't want vaccines. They need freedom.
The White House says the reason the Cuban people are rising up is because of COVID. The demonstrators say nothing could be further from the truth. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
Let's get real here. Let's understand who the people are that are on the right side of freedom. Let's stand with them and let's tighten the screws on this regime.
Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
Cuba is a failure because socialism doesn't work. Marxism doesn't work. Marxism is about power and nothing to do with prosperity. It's about controlling people. A Marxist system wants to keep people poor because poor people are easier to control.
He thinks this may be the last best shot for democracy to take hold in communist Cuba. First-time claims for unemployment benefits shot up by more than 50,000 last week. Over 400,000 Americans made jobless claims, and that disappoints Mark Hamrick with Bankrate.com.
This is disappointing. disappointing. We saw a surprising increase in new jobless claims back above the 400,000 level for the first time since mid-May to 419,000. This is the biggest increase we've seen in a single week since March.
A new report today shows job growth in 26 states that have ended those COVID-inspired unemployment benefits. The payouts have led to labor shortage problems for many small businesses.
It's not helping the folks in the restaurant business like me.
Brent Beshear owns Doc's Smokehouse, which has barbecue joints in several Midwestern states.
I can't reconcile why we would continue to support people staying off work when there's so many jobs out there.
He's had to cut back hours of operation due to the labor shortage problem, which he adds will only worsen once the college help goes back to school next month. The Biden administration rolling out a new approach today to combating America's epidemic of gun violence. Attorney General Merrick Garland headed to Chicago to unveil a set of so-called gun strike forces. The aim here is to choke off the flow of guns being illegally trafficked into urban communities. Senate Republicans successfully blocked yesterday a $1 trillion infrastructure plan. It's because there is no plan, no actual bill, says Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Around here, we typically write the bills before we vote on them.
President Biden says infrastructure is not worth the fight over the filibuster.
There's no reason to protect it other than you're going to throw the entire Congress into chaos and nothing will get done.
Despite the setbacks, Senate Democrats plan to reintroduce the infrastructure bill next week. House Speaker Pelosi has banned two Republicans who support former President Trump from serving on a select committee that's investigating the January riots at the U.S. Capitol. And one of those Republicans is Ohio's Jim Jordan.
I don't think they're going to address the fundamental question. The fundamental question of why wasn't there a proper security presence at the Capitol that day?
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy.
This is the people's house, not Pelosi's house.
McCarthy's pulling all Republicans off that committee that's looking into the Capitol riots, except one, Wyoming Congresswoman Liz Cheney. A judge in Florida says victims and families of last month's deadly condo collapse will get a minimum $150 million in compensation. A third of that money will come from insurance, the rest from the sale of the property where the building once stood. Still to come on the Noon Report, Amish accident in Penyan, Blue Jays flying back to Toronto, and Planned Parenthood hopes to set up shop in Rochester.
Good afternoon. A quiet weather pattern will carry us through the rest of the week into the start of the weekend, then some changes. I'll be back with forecast details in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Forecasters say this July could go down as the wettest on record in New York. Dan Russell's a meteorologist with Spectrum News.
Some crazy rainfall amounts we have seen. And it's not just over the past, say, month or so, but really the past 2 to 3 weeks. That's when most of this rain has fallen. It wasn't that long ago. We were actually talking about moderate drought across portions of the state. That is now history.
Most communities across New York seeing at least 3.5 inches more rain this month than they did in June. In Binghamton, the Parlor Cities picked up almost 9 inches of rain in July. Rochester's had just 2 days the entire month where it did not rain. And in Buffalo, this is the fourth wettest July on record. Western New Yorkers wishing a fond farewell to the Toronto Blue Jays after their 2-month homestand ended in Buffalo last night.
I think it was on the whole great for the city. When else are you going to see the MLB in Buffalo, right? So it's definitely a great thing.
The Blue Jays finally able to fly home after Canada lifted COVID restrictions. Fans say it'll be hard to see MLB come to an end in Buffalo.
This is the best, you know, in my own ballpark.
It's so much more intimate than going to Cleveland or Pittsburgh or anywhere else for that matter.
Salem Field in Buffalo tied the record this summer for hosting the most major league games at a non-major league park. Pennsylvania's highest court has just dealt a blow to victims of child sexual abuse. It's thrown out a lawsuit related to decades of criminal activity within the Catholic diocese. The 5-2 decision ends Renee Rice's effort to recover damages from the Diocese of Altoona-Johnstown. She accuses the church there of covering up and facilitating sexual abuse inflicted on her by a priest in the late 1970s. Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider, hoping to open a new clinic soon in the Rochester suburb of Brighton. Pro-life activist Carrie Parham hopes the town board does not approve.
We're hoping to stop it from happening. There's already five abortion clinics in Rochester. There's 15 comprehensive health care centers in Rochester in total.
The Brighton Town Planning Board held a public hearing last night on the proposed Planned Parenthood. Community activist Dorothy Hayes thinks Monroe County should be promoting a culture of life instead.
We're there on a day-to-day basis to really encourage women to choose life, which is healthier for them and happier for them, but also to inform them as to who Planned Parenthood is.
Planned Parenthood hopes to open that Brighton clinic later this year. Two elderly Amish people from Yates County, New York, had to be airlifted to the hospital after a horrific crash involving their horse and buggy. The buggy was rear-ended by a car in Penyan yesterday.
I was in the shop working, heard a bang. Came out of the door and looked down the hill here. There were some people here and yelling, call 911.
Paul Schrader heard the crash, and when he walked outside, he saw the car damaged and the buggy destroyed.
The buggy was right over here, and it looked like it exploded. There was a man in the road. His wife was in the ditch.
Both victims in the buggy ejected from it, a 79-year-old woman, 80-year-old man. They were taken by helicopters to Strong Hospital in Rochester. Just a month ago, there was another accident, and this one was a fatal accident involving a horse and buggy there near Penyan, New York. Reaction rolling in after Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf seemed to change his mind on voter ID. The Democrat, who'd previously stated he would not approve voter ID, now says he's willing at least to talk about it.
He's the first Democrat governor in the entire nation to come out and say, I will accept voter ID enhancements. We don't know what that looks like, what that is.
Republican Seth Grove authored the voter reform bill.
Do I think he's earnest about working with me? We'll see. He's got my phone number. We live 5 miles apart. We can have tea over one weekend and hammer this out.
That tea may have to wait, though, because of the governor's statement, which he said he was proud to veto Seth Grove's bill. The governor says that he will discuss voter ID as long as it is easy to acquire, says Governor Wolf. National Fuel says there is no evidence of a gas leak at the scene of that home explosion in Lackawanna, New York. A 92-year-old woman died after her house blew up Tuesday morning. Fire and police officials still investigating the cause of that blast. Seven homes were damaged. Canalside in Buffalo is developing the largest roller skating rink in the entire state of New York. The canals on the waterfront will be drained August 9th and turned into one giant roller skating rink. How about that? It will open August 20th, close at the end of October. Admission, $6 for adults, $2 for kids 13 and under. Skate rentals will cost you $4. The Little League World Series making final preparations for next month's tournament. Little League CEO Steve Keener says the tourney this year is
different in many ways, but should be a lot of fun. We're just glad the kids are back on the field and can end their summer in Williamsport.
The best of pint-sized baseball, unable to go to Williamsport last year due to COVID, and this year's tourney will only feature U.S. teams. The Little League World Series runs from August 19th through the 29th there in South Williamsport, Pennsylvania. The 2-minute drill next in sports with the always reliable Sonny Delfiette.
After calling Buffalo home for parts of the past two seasons, the Toronto Blue Jays dropped their final game at Salem Field. After falling to the Boston Red Sox 7-4, the Sox combined for 5 home runs. Alex Cora collected his 250th win as Boston's manager. By the way, the Blue Jays hit 3 homers of their own. Toronto's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. added to a season total with his 32nd long ball. In the Bronx, it wasn't a home run, but a single that did it for the Yankees. Bottom of the 10th against the Phillies.
This should get it done. Deep fly ball, right field. Miller back, turns, looks, and it is a walk-off single for Ryan Lamar, and the Yankees win 6-5.
A big home run in Cincinnati. The Mets with the bases loaded for Dominic Smith. And
lift it to left, Winker. This ball's got some carry, and it's gone.
He knew it was coming.
First couple innings, he got a lot of soft contact on breaking balls.
including myself, I pop one up, and that's just something I kind of took note of, and I was just ready to hit.
Marcus Stroman threw 8 innings of one-hit ball. The Mets beat the Reds 7-0. Cleveland salvaged the final game of their season series with the Astros after a 5-4 win. That's manager Terry Francona's 721st win as the Tribe skipper. The Brooms rot in Arizona. Diamondbacks sweep their series against the Pirates with a 6-4 win. Nationals fall to the Marlins 3-1 in 10 innings. Team USA 2-0 in Olympic softball competition. After shutting out Canada 1-0 today in Tokyo, veteran pitcher Monica Abbott took a no-hitter into the sixth inning when she gave up a double for Canada's only hit. And the University of Texas and University of Oklahoma could begin petitioning the SEC as soon as next week for membership. The two schools will send a letter to the Big 12 Conference early next week stating neither school will renew their media contracts when they expire in 2025. After such, the two schools will then petition for entry into the SEC. That might open the door for West Virginia to return east for the ACC or Big Ten. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiet.
Thank you kindly, Sonny. Still to come on this Thursday edition of the Noon Report, the games are go in Tokyo, protecting the unborn in Texas, and Bull on the Loose on Long Island.
A new movie called The God Committee arranges and presents an interesting thought experiment. How should doctors decide which dying patient should receive a new heart? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. A heart's available, the clock's ticking, and doctors are forced to choose between three viable candidates for a transplant. A woman who could live for several more years with a new heart, but doesn't want it. A beloved middle-aged father who's chronically overweight. And a young, rich kid who might have just overdosed on cocaine, but whose dad is dangling a $25 million donation to the hospital if his son gets the heart. All of this is in the plot of the new movie, The God Committee. The team of doctors and nurses tasked with deciding who will live and who will die are given this nickname, the God Committee, but this is kind of a corrupt understanding of God, isn't it? He doesn't work from an algorithm. He doesn't give good gifts like new hearts to those people who will be the most missed and withhold them from people with bad attitudes or harmful habits or who are kind of annoying or irritating. A Christian worldview of life and human value is not based on quantifiable things such as how many people love a particular person or how many years someone might go on to live. In the God Committee, doctors accuse each other of quote-unquote playing God. Now, of course, they mean it as an insult. But the book of Genesis describes how, within vitally important created and moral boundaries, God actually intended that his people would play him before the creation. When Adam and Eve were commanded to be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, and subdue it, they were told to do what God had just been doing. Throughout the first chapter of Genesis, God filled and formed an earth, described in the second verse of the first chapter as being empty and void. Now his image bearers are to carry on that work, ruling over the created order for God by filling it and subduing it. In fact, even after the fall, that task continues, though now complicated by pain and by thorns. The key distinction here is whether we play God as if God actually exists, or whether we play God as if we are God. And whenever we think it's our authority that determines what's right and what's wrong, we're playing God in the wrong way. This was the enemy's very first temptation for Adam and Eve. This was the temptation of the builders of Babel. This is the temptation that continues today, especially as our technological abilities advance so far beyond our ethics. See, the irony of the God Committee is that doctors don't become gods by deciding who deserves someone else's heart. In fact, does anyone ever deserve another person's heart? Are patients who die before receiving a transplant somehow morally wronged? No, God made his image bearers with magnificent capacity to first imagine and then make these kinds of technologies possible. But as God clearly states as he observes the Babel Project, humans ought not do everything that comes into their minds. Through it all, the confidence that we hold in our abilities is simply misplaced, and we completely overlook the consequences of our decisions. There's a great example of this in an especially poignant scene in The God Committee, in which a main character informs his newly pregnant girlfriend that he cannot be a father to their baby because his important medical work is simply too time-consuming.
but by refusing to honor those people to whom his own actions had bound him, he's now refusing the opportunity to actually image God, to play God as humans, particularly men in this situation, were created to do. It's a privilege, and it's a responsibility that's missed whenever we fail to recognize and submit to our created purpose and created design. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 past the hour, weather where you live next.
For this afternoon, sunshine, some scattered mixed clouds, and a bit more haze in the sky. High temperatures in the 70s to near 80. Tonight, partly moonlit, low in the 50s and low 60s. Tomorrow and Saturday, some sunshine and warming up a bit. 70s to near 80 tomorrow. Upper 70s to low 80s on Saturday. But by Saturday evening, there'll be some showers and rumbles reaching western New York, lasting into the overnight.
All right, Kevin Williams at the Weather Center today. Thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Great to have you with us today. Here's what's going on this Thursday afternoon, the 22nd of July. Opening ceremonies of the Summer Olympics, less than a day away now. The games are go in Tokyo.
One day to go. These pandemic-delayed Olympics are finally set to officially get underway. All this week, officials have been trying to sound optimistic. International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach.
The stage is set for the athletes to shine and inspire the world.
To be sure, this will not be a traditional Olympics.
This is an Olympics that is different in so many different ways.
Olympic historian David Walachensky.
First of all, we've never had an Olympics that were postponed, and we've certainly never had an Olympics that was held during a pandemic.
Still unclear who will get the honor of lighting the Olympic torch.
Steve Futterman reporting a recent poll shows 8 in 10 Japanese citizens thinks the Olympics are a mistake.
Infections here up 150% from last week. More than 1,800 new cases on Wednesday.
That's NBC's Tom Lamas in Tokyo. And that's the highest daily total in more than 6 months. Tokyo 2020 CEO Toshiro Muto told reporters Tuesday, "We cannot predict what the epidemic will look like in the future." He didn't rule out a last-minute cancellation, quote, "should there be any surge of positive cases." The global nature of COVID means mistakes in Japan could turn the whole world into a victim of the Olympic Games.
Mike Bauer with that report. Let's talk more Summer Olympics. Here's NBC's Frank Garrity.
Now, an Olympics update from NBC News Radio.
Team USA will be led during the opening ceremony by flag bearers WNBA star Sue Bird and Marlins infielder Eddie Alvarez. While there will not be any fans at the ceremony tomorrow, Jill Biden will be there. The First Lady touched down in Tokyo overnight. Among the COVID-19 influence changes this year, medalists will have to place the medals around their own necks. Last night, Team USA softball picked up its second win, shutting out Canada 1-0. There are 4 new sports in this Olympiad, including skateboarding.
I think it definitely has an opportunity to help the sport grow a lot. I think we're going to see a lot more skate parks pop up and other places all around the world, which is going to be great to see.
The U.S.'s top-ranked street skateboarder Nyjah Houston says it will likely bring more sponsorship opportunities as well. Olympic officials still looking for an Asian black bear who got into Azuma Sports Park before Wednesday's softball games. I'm Frank Garrity, NBC News Radio.
Catholics in communist Cuba say they feel betrayed by the Pope because of his refusal to condemn the Marxists who rule the island nation.
Communism, Marxism, socialism, these are very anti-Catholic, anti-Christian, anti-religious ideology. And it's just really sad to see the Pope really become an enabler, an apologist for the Cuban communist government, which is brutal and evil.
Conservative activist Rachel Campos Duffy called out the Pope on Fox News.
It took him more than a week to say anything about this crisis in Cuba. And when he did, he said, "I stand with you. I pray for you. Let's have peace and dialogue." Really weak response for somebody who claims to have all this solidarity with the poor. Well, who is more impoverished and in need of support than the poor in Cuba right now? They are living in abject poverty. And the people who are responsible for these conditions are the Communist Party, and the Pope refuses to say anything about it.
As more states legalize marijuana, more children, sadly, are accidentally overdosing on the drug.
Elizabeth Perry is more careful with the edible marijuana gummies she uses to help her sleep.
My first thought was, I did this to him.
Her one-year-old son was rushed to a Maryland hospital after he ate 15 of them, thinking they were candy.
When I laid him down in his crib, he kind kind of went rigid and started shaking and crying.
According to the American Association of Poison Control Centers, the number of kids under 12 who have ingested edibles at home jumped from 132 in 2016 to almost 2,500 last year. Experts warn parents to keep edibles locked up and out of reach from children.
Lisa Mateo reporting the Biden administration distancing itself from a radical group called the Abolitionist Teaching Network. That group appeared on the Department of Education website. The White House claims it was a mistake.
The crumbs are all over your face. Your hand is still in the jar, but you haven't been eating the cookies. Of course, they're going to deny that they are trying to transform our country into a Marxist utopia.
Star Parker with the Center for Urban Renewal says kids are being brainwashed in the classroom, and she's calling on moms and dads to stand up, take their schools back.
Our society is unraveling. That civil society is unraveling because our common culture has collapsed. We are no longer one unit. We have secular and we have sacred. The sacred believe in personal responsibility. The seculars believe in collectivism.
After a link to the radical group appeared on the Federal Department of Education website, the White House responded by saying that it does not endorse the views of the Abolitionist Teaching Network. 25 past the hour, this is the Noon Report.
This is Faith Under Fire. Each Thursday on Family Life, we give voice to religious battlegrounds in this nation. I'm your host, Tracy Lynn. With us today, Jonathan Sines, president of Texas Values. So a new law in Texas from Senate Bill 8 is mixing things up by putting power in the hands of the people when it comes to reporting on doctors performing abortions. What would this law look like in action?
Well, the Texas heartbeat law is very clear. If a baby's heartbeat is detected, that baby will be protected in law. And some are saying it's the strongest pro-life law of its type in the state and in the country. And we know that a heartbeat can be detected as early as 5 to 6 weeks. But this empowers citizens to file civil litigation to enforce it against the abortion doctor, hold them accountable, and have penalties in place. Look, there are over 50,000 abortions just in the state of Texas, but we have an opportunity to save thousands of lives across the state of Texas. And that's the importance of this new law in Texas.
So the law is set to take place in September. And what does a doctor who performs an abortion after detecting a fetal heartbeat face?
There are penalties in place up to $10,000 if the doctor performs the abortion after a fetal heartbeat is detected. And look, it's interesting, too, because the heartbeat is one of the universal indicators of life. And that should be no different whether the baby's in the womb or outside of the womb. You think about when people go to the emergency room, people ask, do they have a pulse? Do they have a heartbeat? We look for that monitor, that little blip on there. We listen for that sound. So this is a universal indicator of life. And this is a way that we make it clear in law that all life should be protected. And that's something that we see bipartisan support for. And we were glad that our Governor Greg Abbott was so enthusiastic to sign it into law.
Yeah. Planned Parenthood and other abortion advocates are not pleased about this Texas heartbeat law. Do you have any details about their recent suit against the upcoming law?
Well, there has been a legal maneuver, as I would call it, in Texas by the abortion groups where they filed a lawsuit in federal court. They didn't even file it in the right court. This is a state law. But it all makes it clear that performing abortion is the central role of Planned Parenthood and abortion entities like them. Even though they try to tell people that that's a small percentage of what they do, they make it clear in their lawsuit that they would go bankrupt and they would cease to exist if they couldn't perform abortions. So we know the truth is coming out. The lawsuit's a complete joke, but we're not surprised by this. I mean, they're going to try to do everything they can to confuse people, to really draw people's focus away from the fact that on September 1st, this law is going to go into effect.
So how does this heartbeat law work exactly? I saw one article and they said you could be at the Starbucks and you could hear that someone in front of you said that they got an abortion and you find out it's after 6 weeks and you could then file suit against that doctor.
Anyone in the state of Texas has the ability to file something in court, civil litigation, civil enforcement, to hold a doctor accountable. And this is a principle that we've always operated. You see that campaign a lot now. If you see something, say something. We've always had this mindset that citizens should be able to step forward if they see something that's going wrong. You see a baby in the back of a car during the hot Texas summer, and the windows are rolled up, and you are in a position to report that, to do something about that, to save that innocent child's life. And that's what this principle is about, too. Anybody in the state of Texas can bring civil litigation when they find out about it. And I think that's going to make it clear to the small amount of abortion doctors that are in the state that people are watching all over the state for this. And we should be. We're talking about innocent human life. And this is a different concept, too, for our state law. Most pro-life laws, you have the attorney general or somebody from the government that enforces it. But that is not the case here. When you remove the government from the equation of enforcing the law, that also makes it difficult, if not impossible, for the pro-abortion sides to say that it's an unconstitutional violation. That's what's really different about this Texas law.
Wow. This is so unique because it's really putting we the people in the driver's seat to protect those most vulnerable.
Well, other states have done it. Louisiana has a pro-life law. It's not a heartbeat law, but it's a pro-life law that empowers citizens to do the same thing. That law was challenged in court. It was upheld by the Federal Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. So we have precedent in place that shows us that it's legal to do this, that it'll hold up in court, and that's exactly what we need. I think this type of approach empowers citizens to say, we think that life is precious, and we're going to stand up and protect it.
That's Jonathan Sines with Texas Values. I'm Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
All right, Tracy, thank you very much. The name of the program, Faith Under Fire, comes your way Thursdays during the Noon Report or online anytime. Just go to familylife.org.
Well, a very good afternoon to one and all. From Johnstown to Jamestown, from Williamsport to Williamsville, from Avoca, PA to Avoca, New York, it's a quiet weather story this afternoon, and it stays that way tonight, tomorrow, heading into the start of the weekend, although a front will deliver some showers and rumbles to parts of the area Saturday night going into Sunday. For this afternoon, sunshine, some scattered mixed clouds, and a bit more haze in the sky. High temperatures in the 70s to near 80. Tonight, partly moonlit, the low in the 50s and low 60s. For tomorrow and Saturday, some sunshine and warming up a bit. 70s to near 80 tomorrow. Upper 70s to low 80s on Saturday. But by Saturday evening, there'll be some showers and rumbles reaching western New York, lasting into the overnight.
All right, Kevin Williams, thank you very much. Finally at noon today, a bull is still on the loose after escaping a slaughterhouse on Long Island back on Tuesday morning. Where is this guy? The 1,500-pound animal was set to be sacrificed for a Muslim holiday. Animal rights activists have been trying to corral it for a couple of days now, but to no avail. That bull's been spotted along highways and roaming in neighborhoods. Wildlife officials plan to spare the beast's life and send it to an animal sanctuary in New Jersey if they could only catch it. And the late word today, they're using a cow now as bait to try and lure in the bull there on Long Island. You can't make this stuff up. And that's the world we live in. Tuesday, the 22nd of July. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.